Welcome to Dazer Update for November 13th, 2022. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
And just a two-man show this week, but we still have plenty to talk about for this week. We had a big Indie World Showcase, showing off a bunch of new indie games coming to mostly just the Switch. We got some other stuff coming out here in the near future. We got one coming out next year, as well as some new games being announced and such, and two big beefs being handled in public. We'll get to talking about, as well as some PlayStation Plus stuff here happening this week coming up. But before we do that, we'll talk about what we've been playing. I'll kick it off here with God of War Ragnarok, the big release for this past week that I'm enjoying a lot. I'm only about 3 hours in, so I'm not going to spoil much here of anything. It's a lot of very basic stuff we kind of knew going in that, you know, Ragnarok is about to happen at some point. It seems like they are in the middle of Fimbulwinter, just sort of the long winter that's, you know, happens before Ragnarok happens. It's been about, I think, 2 or 3 years since the first game. So Atreus has grown up a little bit as a teenager. To which, when you get to meet Sindri and Brock again, Brock is very much like, what the hell is this? Very much mad that he has sort of outgrown the armor that he got from the last time around. And so it's like, well, bring him over and we'll make some armor for him, but you're going to have to keep doing this because he's going to keep betraying us and getting taller. I guess the underlying tone there is that he kind of liked that he was short, so he kind of was around the same height as the dwarves. Yeah, Brock is pretty good so far in this game. He's a lot more vulgar, especially when they're talking about where they're going next. And he's like, oh yeah, that place is probably full of a bunch of Odin fuckers. It's a pretty good way to talk about the first area you get to, but yeah, it's a game that very much is an evolution of what the first game was. Nothing really huge that has changed so much. You even get to keep the two main weapons that you had the first time around, the Blades of Chaos in your axe, that and Atreus still has his bow and arrows. All that good stuff. You know, you're still in the world of God of War. You know, they are very much sticking around in this same spaces, though. At least the big first area you're going to is somewhere new. I assume that you'll get to some more familiar areas and all that, as there is more boat stuff here. But that's less of like the big Lake of the Nine, I think it was called. That you're exploring, but yeah, they do kind of a lot of the same kind of stuff, a lot of the same sort of upgrade stuff, having right materials and some cash to you know, have them craft new equipment or upgrade your old ones, all that kind of stuff. It's presented a little bit differently, maybe a little bit better than the original. You have your skill tree upgrades that you pay with your XP that you're earning. And now they're more explicit. Instead of it being like a separate, I don't know, a single pool between the both of them, now Kratos and Atreus gets their own XP pools to spend on that stuff. But otherwise, it's a lot of the same kind of stuff, which is perfectly fine. If you're going to tell, you know, a story following what happened in the first game, you're not really going to be changing too much here. It's not like it's going to be completely new settings the entire time. But yeah, I'm curious to see how this story progresses and all that, but yeah, definitely a thing I've been seeing people talk about is like there's more humor to this game, and definitely that is a big point. Those so far it's been mostly with the dwarves that make your armor and all that. They're not too surprising. They were fairly humorous back in the first game, though. Yeah, Brock gets to curse a bit more. I believe when he first meets Kratos again, he calls them fuckers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having all sorts of fun there with that. So looking forward to putting some more time into that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Also been playing A Little to the Left. That is part of the Indie World Showcase.
Mm-hmm.
A game that I played the demo when it was on Steam Next Fest a few months ago. And playing it now, it's still a very good game. It's basically a puzzle game based mm-hmm. around organizing sort of household objects. Maybe like some of the stuff you would do in unpacking, but to a bigger degree. Because mm-hmm. you're not unpacking a bunch of, you know, personal belongings and placing them in a room. Instead, you're getting, like, an early one. It's like, here's a pile of papers, and you're like, oh, I should just organize these and, you know, put the biggest paper down first at the bottom and sort of go up smaller, that kind of stuff. Though you do get puzzles that have multiple solutions.
Mm.
So you might get, like, a series of books that you can organize, and you might go like, oh, the obvious one is maybe by size.
Mm.
But you may have, you know, colors, like doing a color gradient of sorts mm-hmm. That you could organize by, or maybe a specific pattern on the books that might lead you to a different solution, or even something like, you know, the size of the book, the width as a potential thing. So yeah, there's kind of a decent bit of variety in there for the various puzzles, and there's only like one type that really stymies me. It's these ones that are kind of mirror puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily mirrors in actual mirrors, but more you get two pairs of the same item or mm-hmm. a pair of the same item, and you're supposed to arrange them in such a way that, you know, the left side mirrors the right side.
Right.
Kind of thing that it's not always obvious, like, what the pattern you're supposed to place them in. Because every other puzzle generally has pretty good ability for you to know, like, oh, this is, you know, these items lock into these specific spaces, so I just got to figure out the way to put them together. But those ones don't, and the way you place them down, sometimes they'll adjust the opposite version in some way, and I'm like, I don't know, understand like what that does or anything, but luckily the game's pretty generous with, they have a hint system.
Mm-hmm.
That's more like a doodle version of the solution, and then just has a bunch of like pencil marks all over it, so it makes it hard to see.
Right.
So you have to take an eraser to erase off the pencil marks to see like what's under, so you can kind of start erasing a little bit of it, because if you're trying to figure out like, well, I just need a little bit to understand what I'm supposed to be doing here, kind of thing, you can do that. It also has an option in the menus called Let It Be, which just lets you skip the puzzle to move it to the next one. So it lets you kind of continue on without it being like a progress block.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a nice thing there. And what else they have in there? They have a daily puzzle system that I've seen people liken it to Wordle in a sense.
Yeah.
If you're trying to potentially get streaks, which I think it has achievements for going up to 365 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And conveniently, when I streamed it, the first one I got was one of those mirror puzzles, and I just could not figure it out for the life of me.
Right.
So conveniently, once midnight hit, I checked out the next one and got it done in like 5 seconds after the stream was over. So it was a great example of how occasionally the puzzles can be perplexing, depending on how you process that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it's pretty easy early on. The other neat thing to this is that occasionally a cat just fucks with you during his puzzles. It's kind of the a main sticking point, though. For most of it, it's not really, you don't really see the cat ever. There's like a couple of puzzles specifically where the cat shows up to fuck with you. But I've seen one puzzle I tried a couple times. It was another mirror one where the cat just came out and just started moving shit around just to fuck with me. Luckily, it wasn't too big of an issue. So yeah, it's that's a game I really like a lot. It's on Switch and PC.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely worth checking out. PC might be a bit better than that in the Switch version, because you have a mouse to move stuff around.
Yeah.
Versus moving a cursor to grab stuff, but I think it's fine either way.
Mm.
For that. So yeah, that's that one. And Once Upon a Jester is another new release that is also an Indie World Showcase that I grabbed. This one I grabbed on the Switch. And it is a game that I'd say is a comedic, musical, sort of traveling theater troupe game, where you are a pair of buddies who start off in this first town, who learn of this like contest to perform at the kingdom. Sock and Jester, you control Jester, who very much has a jester look to them. Sock has kind of a sock head look to him, so you're kind of doing a lot of that stuff, and it's quite a fun game, and I think there are a lot of cool vibes to it that I would liken to home movies a lot, where very much the a lot of their attempts to make these different shows that you get are very amateurish, and when you're at various points in each of the shows, you get opportunities to choose like what sort of direction you're going to go with in that little show. It might be like, oh, we're going to do a little music thing here, or go to an action segment, or you know, do something spooky or dramatic. And like the other one's romantic kind of spin. You get like at least three choices in a lot of that stuff. Before you do those performances, you kind of get an opportunity to go around the town and look at what people are talking about, and they'll have signs up as well that kind of give you hints to like what topics they don't want to see for that night. So it might be like, oh, no love stuff, no romantic stuff that night, or you know, no action. So you have to adjust the directions you're taking your shows accordingly. Which lets you try out a lot of the ways that they vary between the different sort of topic changes or whatever. And it kind of adds a very kind of improv troupe kind of vibe to the whole game, which is something I really like about it. And I just got to the third town in it. I think it's three towns, and then you get to the kingdom. You're trying to get 15 bouquets of roses after each of the performances. It's like up to 5 rating you get. So if you're doing pretty all right, I've been getting a lot of 4s. So after 4 nights, I can get out of there pretty easily. Though sometimes you can fuck up, and it's not like the one time I really fucked up. I got 3 out of 5. But the others, I got 4, so it wasn't too big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's got a lot of good humor to it. Talk between the different performances. You get to explore the town and like talk to people. You have a buddy that's running a market stall in each of the towns, and he's got the accents are great. I believe the studio is Dutch. It's a team of 4 musicians that decided to make games. And so there's a lot of good musical stuff to this, and also a lot of good humor, and they do weird accents. And they, in the Indie World Showcase little presentation they did, they talked about a lot of times they just use their first take, even if they messed up something in it. Cause you can hear times where they're like about to break out laughing or something, just cause they mess something up or say something weird. But it all adds to the whole vibe of the game and makes it a really fun kind of experience that I'm excited to get back into. Just had a fun bit going through the wild woods that are between these two areas. And so you stop in this little town in there that you really shouldn't have, but it was getting dark, I guess, and so they decided to stop. And you find this guy who has a pinata for a head because the witch that occasionally visits just turned his head into a pinata.
Mm-hmm.
And so then there you also run into a certain creature that's been kind of stalking you for a while, and you learn their nature, and apparently they can play the bass and they join in on your song, kind of performance thing. And yeah, there's a lot of fun moments and such to the game that is a lot of fun. So I definitely recommend people that kind of like improv stuff, comedic, musical kind of stuff. And then, yeah, like I said, it has some home movie vibes that I really like to it. The Brendan Small Show back in the day were like, they were working with materials that wasn't maybe as good as you would want, but they made the best out of it. That's kind of a lot of what's going on here. So much so that they do a lot of cool stuff to play with your expectations. Like early on, they go like, oh, we fucked up, game over. And they go rolling the credits and like, wait, you didn't think it was ending that easily. Get back onto the game kind of thing. So yeah, it's a fun time. And the other game I've been playing, this came out on Friday, Atari 50. The Anniversary Celebration is the full title. It is, you know, a 50th anniversary Atari collection done by Digital Clips. And it is an incredibly impressive product. It has a bunch of games in it from the 2600 all the way up to the Jaguar and Lynx. Two platforms there that never make it into any of these kind of collections. And that's kind of the thing that I dived in when I dove into when I played the collection on the stream. And, you know, those weren't great platforms. But, you know, the neat thing about the Lynx is that, you know, it was a color screen, LCD screen that's, you know, the Game Boy that released a few years earlier was not. So got to do some interesting stuff with that, bringing, you know, more console-ish games to the platform that could look better, maybe run a little bit better, that kind of stuff. But it has just a weird design where there are sort of two sets of the same buttons on the one side, because you can kind of flip it around and play it left-handed or right-handed. Sort of thing that's just kind of a weird little thing to it. You know, it has like better speakers, and you can see like the marketing materials they have in this game that show you like, oh yeah, they definitely like tried to hammer that home. It's like, oh, the Game Boy sucks. We have, you know, better screen and all this. Even like one of the marketing materials specifically shows for the Jaguar, shows like Mario and Sonic on the ad. That was like, oh, that's a thing that doesn't happen anymore. Nobody's ever going to show like the enemy thing stuff in there. They might reference like the other guys don't do this, you know, that kind of thing. But you get to see a lot of magazine ads here that are pretty fun. Like a neat thing that I saw in the boxes of the Jaguar games is that they always had a screenshot on the front of the box. That's, you know, was not a thing that game boxes really did. It was always on the back, but they show you something on front, I guess, as a way to show you kind of more what the game is without having to flip it over. Since, you know, they might be in a locked case that you wouldn't get to flip it over at times. But yeah, the thing you also find out pretty quickly when you start playing some of these games, like, they're not great. The Lynx games are all pretty simple for what they are. They're you know, D-pad and two buttons. It's nothing too complicated, but also this being an Atari collection means none of the third-party stuff is in here. So you can see in ads, like, a bunch of games that are mentioned, and you're like, oh, we're not going to get most of these because these are third-party games. You know, you're not going to get... I'm looking at now, like, Ms. Pac-Man or Rampage or Gauntlet or Rygar, Paperboy, and it's like, yeah, you're not going to get any of those. Those were third-party games. So I'm looking at it right now. There's like Scrapyard Dog, supposedly labeled as the best platformer on the system, and it's like, that's not a lofty, you know, claim. And there's like a game called Turbo Sub that is like a flight shooter game where you're flying around shooting at enemies. That's pretty impressive for what it is. What it's doing on a Lynx, but you know, it's not particularly great. There's like Basket Brawl, which is like that weird period of basketball games where there's a lot of combat to them. Then like NBA Jam would dominate pretty quickly once that showed up. Which had like Charles Barkley, Shut Up and Jam, that kind of stuff. And that's the thing there is like, yeah, I guess that kind of works, but it's also just weird for what it is. But yeah, the one that's actually probably the most interesting is like Malibu Bikini Volleyball, which is a volleyball game that plays pretty well. And it also does a lot of work, like you have options in it. That was also interesting to see like options in a portable game, which I don't think very many Game Boy games had that stuff. But here you had like options for, you know, speed of the ball, like essentially making the game easier so you can actually do that kind of stuff. It's like, yeah, this game maybe sucks, but I'm going to make it easier so I can have more fun. That kind of stuff. But the Jaguars, where things get really kind of sketchy because the Jaguar controller is a very unique controller. It is a three-button controller with a numpad below it. So the games, the way they emulate them, they essentially map the numpad stuff, unless it's useful buttons, they put it on the D-pad or the right stick as like a weapon wheel kind of selection. If they're actual useful buttons, they might put them on, you know, any of the other face buttons or shoulder buttons. And so like the one that supposedly came with the system was a game called Cybermorph, which is a like polygonal 3D shooter kind of. Is just bad. It took me a while to just understand how it played, because it's, you know, this is an era where this stuff wasn't necessarily standardized just yet, 3D games. So yeah, it's, but I did get the achievement, the trophy that's for angering the weird face that shows up occasionally to say like nice things or bad things, but there's just a trophy that's just for, hey, get her angry and say the one line that people know, I guess. And there's others, there's like a side-scrolling shmup called Trevor McFur in the Crescent Galaxy that's bad, but they tried to make an R-type game. There's like a game called Evolution Dino Dudes. It's like a Lemmings game, but bad. And there's the actual, probably the best game here of any of these is Tempest 2000, which is, if you didn't know, that's Jeff Minter making a sequel to Tempest. And it has a lot of early versions of the trippy stuff that Jeff Minter would do. Him at LlamaSoft. And this game is very good. It's great to have an official way to play this instead of having to go through emulation and all that. And you definitely see, they even call it like Meltovision graphics for this weird brand of trippy graphics kind of thing. But yeah, a lot of it's still Tempest and all that. But they do have like the original game. There's like co-op stuff too, and a multiplayer game to play against your buddies kind of stuff. There's an interesting Club Drive game that's like a 3D, a fully 3D free roaming driving game. Though free roaming is more of like you have like a finite space to explore in. Like the first one you get to is a bedroom looking thing. So you're like a little toy car driving through it. But you do get to go to like a handful of other areas. But yeah, a lot of the, what you get out of that is more just like go around and collect the, this randomly spawning little ball that drops around. It's like you get 10 of them. I think you can adjust settings for that stuff for how fast, and you just try and get up your leaderboard, your local leaderboard. No online leaderboards with any of that stuff. But yeah, it's pretty neat. Some of the, seeing some of these games in action. There's like a pinball game in there that I was surprised was even a thing that happened. There's like a Missile Command 3D, which is like, what if a lot of like the shitty N64 ports of games, this very much feels like that. You're basically playing like first person Missile Command, where the cities are kind of laid out around you in sort of a more spherical formation as you look around and place shots, but you can also just play original Missile Command. And they have the game called Atari Karts, which is like, oh yeah, we should do Mario Kart, because that's when this happened. And it sucks. But yeah, there's like, and there's a really terrible 3D fighting game called Fight for Life. That is just awful
yeah.
in every way. But yeah, it's, but it was directed by somebody that worked on Virtua Fighter. So
yeah,
that means it's going to be just as good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not. It's a very poorly made game. But hey, that's the part of history is that there's going to be good and bad parts of it, and it all should be noted. And you can see, like, marketing materials, like, when they had to drop prices and pull stunts to, like, have a Jaguar kiosk in a mall in Colorado to mm-hmm. get people to pay attention to them in 1995, mm-hmm. holiday season, because that's, like, when the PlayStation was about to hit. And, like, the Saturn would be out by that point, and the N64 would be coming out the year after that. And it's like, yeah, they tried a lot of things. To get people to pay attention to these systems, and it obviously didn't work. Because these are like their last hurrahs in the console space kind of stuff. And yeah, the collection itself has a lot of good supplemental material. There's some video interviews with people that worked at Atari and some that worked around them, all that kind of stuff. And you can go into a lot of their original arcade stuff, Jaguar, Lynx, 2600, 5200, 7800 stuff. Some of their PC stuff that they made as well. And even there, they had a handful of original games that are made by Digital Eclipse that are like some are mashups of some of their other games. Some are, there's like one that's like a continuation of a series on the Atari 2600 that was supposed to be a four-part series that only got three. There's one that's like, oh yeah, they kind of made Simon before Simon was popular, but obviously it didn't get that popular to it. So you know, there's like a new reimagined Yara's Revenge mm-hmm. kind of thing that's cool, and there's a new haunted house, all that kind of stuff. It's a really cool collection. It has a lot of interesting historical stuff if you're interested in that.
Yeah.
The games are going to be iffy depending on, you know, how easily you take to that kind of stuff. Some of these games are obviously going to be just hard to decipher because it's literally them figuring out how to make, you know, a platformer or an action game on a, you know, a 2600 kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, let's be completely honest. The controls for a lot of games were suggestions more than anything else.
Yeah. Like in Atari VCS, mm-hmm. controller is just a stick and a button.
Yep.
So they did what they could with the things they had at that time. But they did a lot at times.
Yep.
You know, there's even a 2600 game that's from, you know, that was made in the 90s
mm-hmm.
to show like, yeah, people were still making those games back then.
Yeah.
Not very often, but some would occasionally leak out and people would, you could see like what a more modern context for game development could apply to that system.
I have a feeling that probably developing a game for the 2600 is probably easier than a lot of, say, modern gaming. So, you know, doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I mean, most of those old Atari 2600 games were pretty much 100% like one-man shows. So,
yeah. Like maybe a couple people at most.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was a very interesting time in gaming in the early mid-70s to the 80s. As Atari was huge in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
waned in the 80s as they got bought by Warner. And then Nintendo came in and destroyed them, essentially, as well as they destroyed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And got sold around a lot. So it's kind of wild that modern Atari would have this kind of collection be made.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a very cool collection. It's $40. It's on everything: Xbox, PlayStation, Switch and PC. So if you're interested in that, definitely check it out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon?
As for me, pretty much my entire game has been consumed by Persona 5 Royal up to this point. I had forgotten just how incredibly addictive that game was. And now that I've started playing it again, I 100% understand, understanding why that game was as great as the first time around, but also understanding how, in many ways, they have managed to build upon what is essentially perfection. They definitely added some quality of life details to this game that definitely make it, if not necessarily easier, it definitely makes it run smoother. And the sort of additional stuff that they've added onto it, the additional characters and stuff like that, they really did manage to sort of put them in very smoothly. So the thing about Persona 5 Royal is there's actually like a whole new palace that you can get and a whole new semester, like a whole new boss fight and everything that you can get that you can do. But in order to access it, you have to essentially not necessarily max out, but you have to get it like pretty far up. The relationship status with three of the characters, two of them being the new characters they introduced to it, and one of them is Goro Akechi, the boy detective. They actually changed sort of how his relationship status thing works somewhat, so you can't really use the same strategies necessarily that you did the first time around. But I've been kind of making it.
That's the reason why last week I mentioned that.
Yeah.
If this is the second time playing, you're probably better off using FAC. But yeah, if it's your first time playing the game, which I know it isn't for you.
Like, yeah.
The main thing to get all the new content is to focus on all the new stuff. And
yeah,
if you've played it before, you don't know what that new stuff is.
Yeah. So I already maxed. I'm a good halfway through the other two, but I've already gone past summer break, which means that I got a summer break and the school trip, which means I kind of have to really hunker down and focus on some of the stuff. Good thing though, is I know what gifts I can give them to help, speed it along. So, there's also that, but yeah, that game is still incredibly fun and incredibly addictive to play, and yeah, I just love it. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So Dan, what about you?
Yeah, for me, it's primarily been God of War.
Yeah,
it come in late, so I don't know how much Chris already went into detail regarding his play so far. But for me, I've gotten as far as Atreus getting his new arrow where he can like shoot all the green stuff. Did you get that far, Chris?
Mm-hmm.
No, I got to the first town.
Okay, yeah. So that happens pretty much there. So we're almost at the same spot. And when you're playing this game, obviously you'll want to play the 2018 version first, just because like you have access to a whole bunch of things that you don't get access to until later on in the prior game. So yeah, it's pretty cool so far. It's back to the whole everything on one take, and part of what made the 2018 God of War so awesome for me is the fact that almost everything was a spectacle, and they really turn up the notch on that with God of War Ragnarok. Like, I don't want to go into details because it affects the plot, but some of these early fights are already pretty epic. I'm having a great time with the battle system. It also is a little bit harder than I remember. Like, I've died like maybe 6 times, and I remember in the previous one, I didn't die until I hit a Valkyrie. So, and for the record, I've never killed any of the Valkyries, so I don't really consider myself very skilled at all. But yeah, some of the puzzle solving is pretty cool. You're using the Leviathan axe as your ice thing. You have like sort of a hook shot early on in the game, and like the game actually feels fairly open right from the get go, which is something that the prior one didn't do as much, just because like it was a little bit more linear, but it didn't really open up towards the end, whereas this one, it feels like it's a little bit more open-ended. Really enjoying it so far. Atreus has definitely come into his own as a character. He's definitely matured. You can hear it in his voice and whatnot, and the performance from the voice actors is just fantastic. I still love the talking head. It's great. I guess it gives up a whole lot more lore to it. And I'm not as far as I would like to be, but I hope to get some gameplay in tonight before another trip I take later on in the week. Aside from that, I've also played a little bit of Bayonetta 3. Not that much more. I played like one more mission. And this game also feels a little bit more open-ended than what I'm used to. Granted, I've only played like through half of the first one and maybe the first mission of the second. Whereas this third one, like, I don't want to say it's open world, but like there's a lot of like point A to point B stuff that seems a little bit open-ended because you can free roam in this one level that I'm at. So that's actually pretty interesting and definitely a breath of fresh air compared to the fact that I feel like I've been watching more than I've been playing. And that's been like my main complaint for this game so far. Aside from that, I've also started Tinykin on Xbox Game Pass. It is a 3D open world platformer, but it's also very similar to Pikmin because the character you use has access to all these little guys that he can just throw at places to solve puzzles. It's pretty cool so far. And that's pretty much it for me. I also did buy Sonic Frontiers because it was like $40 as a Black Friday sale, so I look forward to jumping into that one.
Yeah, I'm getting that one from GameFly here probably in the next couple days. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that whole thing is.
Mm-hmm.
I did watch Jeff Gerstmann play a couple hours of it, and I could see like his interest peaked in the game when the Nu Metal Evanescence song showed up during one of the boss fights, which is like, all right, this is where it went Sonic. Because you get this very specific kind of song that is tied to the franchise. So that was sort of a humorous thing, especially when... So that is a game that doesn't have an open world. It has like a handful of them. So once you beat one, you move over to the next one kind of thing. And you realize like, oh yeah, all the pre-order stuff that made the first one seem like it was super easy, that all goes away for the second one where you have to actually play the game, which is like, all right, you got to do all the grinding for materials and such that you need for real. And that's where a lot of things start to become clear about that game. And it depends entirely upon how much you like Sonic, at least the Sonic tropes of the mini games they've made over the past 20 years.
So
let's get to some news here. There is a new month for the PlayStation Plus game catalog of stuff for the extra and premium tiers. I'll go here for the first tier that's for extra and premium. They have The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim for PS4 and PS5. Special edition, so you get all the fancy extras on that. Not everything that comes with the anniversary edition. Obviously, they would like you to pay the $20 to upgrade to get all that stuff, but
yeah,
you'll be fine with what this comes with.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think it adds like fishing and a couple other weird things to it? But along with that, Ubisoft jumps in with Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege. Another game where they're fine with you having just access to the game, so you can buy, the characters and whatnot in that game. It's PS4 and PS5. Then Square Enix shows up and says, hey, do you like Kingdom Hearts? We're giving you all the Kingdom Hearts. There's Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 plus 2.5 Remix. There's Kingdom Hearts HD 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue. There's Kingdom Hearts 3 PS4. Conveniently not the one that comes with the expansion, because you can buy that with your own money. They also put in Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory, which is the rhythm game, which might be the one I might check out, because that's one that I played the demo. I was like, oh, this is pretty neat, but I'm not that interested in Kingdom Hearts music to buy a whole game about it. But it has 140 tracks from across the various games in the series, so might be something interesting to check out. Those are all PS4 games. There's no PS5 versions of any of those. Oddworld Soulstorm Enhanced Edition for PS4 and PS5. It's a pretty decent new Oddworld game for that. It's in the Enhanced Edition. They went back and improved some things, make it better, because like, there were definitely some issues people had with it. So there you go. Then Ubisoft comes back with Tom Clancy's The Division 2 for PS4. So you can get access to that. And also Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Breakpoint. So you can check that game out. Also, let's see, there's Chorus, PS4 and PS5. That is a space combat shooter. So you play as dual protagonist Nara and her sentient AI companion in Starfighter Forsaken. That one I've heard good things about, so I might check that out. There's What Remains of Edith Finch for PS4.
Yep.
I assume you might get the PS5 version as well with that. That got a PS5 and Xbox Series X and S upgrade recently. But that game's a lot of fun to check out if you're into narrative adventure games. Let's see, The Gardens Between. That is a puzzle adventure game. PS4 and PS5, that one's one. I started that on Xbox Game Pass, got a little bit in, and then took a break and never came back, so I might pick it up here. As you're kind of rewinding and messing with time flow, to solve puzzles there. And other stuff coming out on the game catalog here, Earth Defense Force World Brothers. I think that's the one that's Minecraft, at least the visual style is like Minecraft. Where it's all blocky, boxily kind of look. There's Earth of Force Iron Rain, which I think is another game in the series that people didn't necessarily like, at least Earth Defense Force people didn't like super well. I think it was one where they were trying to do something different, I think, a little bit. And of course, the people that like the other games don't take well to that. And there's One Chanbara Origin as well. I believe that's probably an origin game around the scantily clad samurai girls fight zombies. There was a live action movie made in Japan one of those times, and it's about what you would expect out of that. So yeah, that's the new games for Extra and Premium. Just for Premium, the classic stuff, it seems to just be those Ratchet & Clank games we talked about last week. So you get the first three games, Ratchet & Clank games, that are the PS3 versions. Deadlocked and Ratchet & Clank Future Tools of Destruction, all PS3 games, so they are streaming only. So there you go. Some pretty good stuff there.
Sorry, the highlight is The Gardens Between. That's always something I've had my eye on, and I don't know if it's still on the Xbox Game Pass list, but like that's definitely something I've wanted to try. It looks like this package is consistently doing some good stuff for PlayStation owners, and I don't know where they're at as far as like the success of stuff. But the other one I also have on my Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory. That game just for some reason doesn't drop below $15, and cool, I can find it. I just download it. So looking forward to that one.
Yeah, some neat stuff there. And obviously big stuff for people that have not played any of the other stuff. The Kingdom Hearts stuff, or, you know, Ghost Recon or whatever.
Yeah.
Skyrim. You somehow haven't played that in the past 10 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, let's get to some dates. First up here is Chained Echoes. This is a turn-based RPG. From... being published by Deck 13 Spotlight and developer Matthias Linda. This will be coming to PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. And it'll also be on Game Pass when it launches for console and PC. It looks pretty neat from what I've seen here, and they have some release date trailer and all that. Kind of looks like you may have a little bit of a Chrono Trigger looking kind of battle system, but I'm not 100% sure. Just how it all works, but it looks pretty neat for what it is. There's not too many of those JRPG style indie games, but they're definitely going for a PS1 and Super Nintendo kind of influence. So yeah, that might be one to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
It looks like it'll be $25 otherwise if you don't want to get it from Game Pass on Xbox. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Other one coming out about a week later, December 13th, Infinite Guitars.
Yeah.
This is a rhythm RPG published by Humble Games and developer Nico Nico. This will be Switch, Xbox One, and PC for about $20. Looks really neat from what I've seen. They're also going to be putting the album out on Apple Music and Spotify here on November 17th, so pretty soon, so you can just listen to that up front if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, everything I'm looking at here at the screenshots and such sounds pretty neat.
Mm-hmm.
As you get a very anime style to it, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, looks pretty fun. So looking forward to that as well. And the last date we have here, Tales of Symphonia Remastered.
Mm-hmm.
The latest remaster of this game is going to be out February 17th.
Mm-hmm.
PS4, Switch, Xbox One. That was announced earlier this year. And kind of has the one caveat, it seems like it is going to be limited to 30 FPS.
Mm-hmm.
Despite, you know, many of the other JRPG remasters around getting improvements up to 60 FPS. This one seems to, I don't know if it has tech issues with the engine or whatever, but that's unfortunate, but people still jump at a chance to play this game that is at least well-liked by the fan base.
Yeah.
I don't know how well it's going to be liked by people outside of that.
Well, I mean, you know, the Tales of Vesperia got faster, and it did really.
Yeah, well, that's a lot more modern than
for this me in one particular. Tales of Symphonia was the game that really put the franchise on the map. Yeah. Also, coincidentally, the GameCube was just starving for third party content, and like this was a huge, I mean, sort of at the time of its release, sort of like a huge third party exclusive, even though it eventually came out on PC, but.
Mm.
It was sort of that for the GameCube, and like that sort of just had an install base there. Like this came out during a time where it was a big deal that a GameCube game would have two discs. You know, kind of weird. Yeah, like for me, it's definitely a bright spot in the series. The part that is a little bit questionable is the fact that it's remastered, but if you look at these trailers, it doesn't look good. And it's unfortunate because the Tales series is, I mean, especially looking at Arise, it's one of the better looking games as far as the genre goes. And, you know, when you look at it now, it looks bad. I'm sure, like, obviously it doesn't affect the overall quality of the game, but if you want to introduce us to a new audience, this is kind of, we'll see how that goes.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see. Yeah. They even put it in this Q&A, they link in the article, you get 1080p and, all of these platforms, except for obviously Switch and handheld mode, but yeah, it's 30 FPS on all three platforms, regardless of which way you play it, on what powerful system you play it on. So, yeah, at least it looks like it's going to be about 11 gigs, so not too big for that. But yeah, that's also coming out in a very busy time frame in the middle of February. Sort of right before and after a bunch of games, bigger games that people are looking forward to. So it might be one, if you're not sold on it right now, just wait. Bandai Namco loves to put their games on sale, and I've been like looking at the stuff they've been putting on sale, Blade, and they're putting stuff on sale for like 80% to 90% off.
Mm.
Like that open world One Piece game is like 90% off right now.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, all right, I'll check that out. I'll see this weird game where Luffy can sneak behind enemies and take them out quietly that he would never do in anime. That's just not his style, but I can do that in a game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's get to some more news here.
Mm-hmm.
Remedy has announced a new deal that they have signed with 505 Games to work on Control 2.
Mm-hmm.
Once known as Codename Heron. It's currently in the concept phase, so probably won't be out for at least a few more years.
Yeah.
But it'll be at least available on PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC.
Yeah.
They're publishing the PC version, while 505 will handle publishing the console versions.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they did post some concept art.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as much as they've got on the game right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now, they're working on getting Alan Wake 2 out the door. So.
Yeah, among other stuff.
Yeah.
Because they also have like a multiplayer control mm-hmm. game that they're working on as well. So they got a lot on their plate. And they're also working on remakes of Max Payne 1 and 2 as well. So yeah, they got a lot to work on.
Mm-hmm.
They said their initial development budget is at 50 million euros,
mm-hmm.
which is probably not too different from what it is in US bucks. You have about 51 million.
Yeah.
So not huge, but probably pretty huge for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, like this is a studio that prior to Control, you know, mm-hmm. it was Alan Wake and a whole bunch of other stuff. So happy to see them being busy. Control 2, I wouldn't say is a surprise, but it's definitely a game that deserves a follow-up. I mean, after mm-hmm. all, I believe this game takes place in the, or the series takes place in the Alan Wake universe, right? So it's cool seeing them continue to grow the lore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, one of their expansions was called Awe, Alan Wake Experience. I forget what the E stood for. But yeah, it's in the similar realms of just weird shit that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Control 2 officially mm-hmm. happening, even though we were pretty sure it was going to happen anyway. Also happening, Capcom announced that they are working on a Monster Hunter mobile game.
Mm-hmm.
With Timi Studio Group, a developer that you may not know by name, but they've worked on a number of games, particularly Pokemon Unite, as well as Metal Slug Code J.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're working on an upcoming open world game called Honor of Kings World.
Mm-hmm.
The most generic mobile game name you could make. But yeah, they're working on a new Monster Hunter game. And yeah, that seems like that could work with the way that mobile games these days are much more capable of having bigger environments and being a bit more complicated, especially with all these sort of controller add-ons and such you can get for these phones
mm-hmm.
To be able to play that kind of stuff. So if you're that kind of person that needs Mobile Hunter on your phone, though that's probably more aimed at the Asian market that is very much all about the mobile game stuff.
Yeah.
Japan, Korea, China, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That'll probably do very well over there.
Yeah.
Versus just doing some minor ports to the phones. But that's about all the information we have here, really.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there you go. Monster Hunter game happened at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, next up here, we have an acquisition. Krafton mm-hmm. has acquired Neon Giant. This is the developer of The Ascent. They are already working on their next game, which they have said is going to be an open world first person shooter.
Oh, okay.
So that probably fits Krafton pretty well.
Yeah.
If you don't know that name, they are the PUBG publisher.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the, what's the Dead Space game? Callisto Protocol.
Yep.
So yeah, they like their shooty games.
Mm-hmm.
Though they are also publishing that weird turn-based tabletop tactics game,
mm-hmm.
Moonbreaker. So
yeah,
they're getting a little bit of variety in there for that. But yeah, there's not really much to this. It's just part of their earnings report here that came out this week. So good on the dev for doing well enough to get some bigger financial support.
Mm.
Hopefully they get to make the stuff they want to make. Mm. So yeah, there you go. And then we'll get to some beefs that people have aired. We talked a while ago about the situation going on at ZAUM.
Mm-hmm.
The company surrounding the makers of Disco Elysium.
Yep.
That had dismissed a number of the chief creatives
Pretty much all of them, actually. Like, pretty much all of the original developers and the writer stuff are gone.
Yeah. And the big thing that happened a few weeks ago is that, let's see, Martin Luiga, I believe, had, or no, Kurvitz, Robert Kurvitz filed a lawsuit late last month that accused them of committing fraud. At least two of the people, CEO Ilmar Kompass and executive producer Tonis Habel, of committing fraud to taking over the holding company that owns the studio.
Yeah, and Habel in particular has committed fraud in the past.
Yeah.
So,
as they've said in a Medium post, we have that Tutrik OU must have attained control over Zaum Studio OU by fraud. We believe the money used by Tutrik OU to buy the majority stake was taken illegally from Zaum Studios OU itself. Money that belonged to the studio and all shareholders, but was used for the benefit of one. Money that should have gone towards making the sequel. That's, I think they've said there's potential for a criminal charge to be filed that would like require them to go to prison for like 3 years, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like over the past few days, they put out, ZAUM put out a statement accusing these creatives of fostering a toxic work environment and trying to illegally sell the company's intellectual property. Essentially, let's see, the rumor that our decision to terminate the contracts of these individuals was taken for financial gain is entirely unfounded, does not in any way reflect the facts. It was a decision that had to be taken for the well-being of the collective. And yeah, there's back and forth going on with this. Supposedly, Havel was secretly in charge of the studio's purse strings and top-level decision-making.
Denied
it, and ZAUM CEO Ilmar Kompass told the newspaper Kurvitz had not been fired over financial disagreements, but over refusal to turn in satisfactory work and for treating colleagues poorly. Kompass wanted to accuse Kurvitz specifically of belittling women in the past and said that once the company was made aware, it decided to take action. While active litigation limits what we can share publicly, we believe additional information will provide a more accurate picture, given our former employees have neglected to mention key facts to reporters on blogs and other public platforms. And so there's a whole big statement you can read that is very dense. And then, yeah, Kurvitz and Rostov's statement as well. It's incredibly dense with information. It just shows how messy this is all going to be, trying to figure out like what is truth or what is put out there as spin or deflections. It's just,
it's kind of reminded me of the whole situation that developed with Bayonetta's voice actor and how it just kind of spiraled into something just very unpleasant. Because it's like, people were willing to rally around her because, voice actors do kind of get a raw deal. And, she, her voice is kind of a big part of that franchise, and she probably does deserve to get a bit more money. And then it turns out that she was also, for one thing, she was actually lying, that she was actually given offered more money than she admitted to. And she's just an all-around shitty person as well. And the fact that she kind of threw another voice actor, Jennifer Hale, under the bus for taking the job, And so now we got, Kurvitz, who's really is the sort of creative center of both, the Disco Elysium game and the universe it's based in, essentially more or less being forced out of the company that he helped, that, he founded specifically so that he could, produce this project. For the moment, I'm on Kurvitz and their side here because, again, we're talking about a person, the guy in charge of the purse strings and producer who has committed fraud in the past. So, how trustworthy is he with these accusations? And yet, you know, when stuff like, you know, misogyny and poor work environments, accusations come around, it is something, you know, you need to take those accusations, even if it's, you know, against someone you genuinely like. But yeah. So far, I have not seen really any good evidence to support the side of the company at this moment. But it's possible we'll hear about it later on.
Yeah, we'll have to see if this goes to actual court and how that all plays out.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, yeah, it is just a lot of stuff being thrown in both directions.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that is the latest on that. We'll have to keep an eye on this and see if any big updates happen. But I imagine it being a potential lawsuit, maybe criminal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to see if that happens anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, that will be in limbo for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But this next one here is about something that's been in limbo for about 2 years now. Doom Eternal. Mm-hmm. And it came out to a lot of good reviews and all that.
Yeah, critical acclaim, and it's an overall a really fun game.
Yeah, and the soundtrack was a thing that people were very critical on, involving, especially when they decided to put the official soundtrack in the special edition.
Yeah.
That's Mick Gordon got blamed for a lot of the poor quality of things in here being difficult to work with and all this.
Yeah.
Marty Stratton and id Software sort of posted a big thing on the Reddit, the Doom Reddit, I assume, about this whole issue. And so Mick Gordon has been kind of seemingly sitting on the sidelines watching all this happen.
Yeah.
And has posted his own big, long Medium post, about 14,000 words, according to the Kotaku article here.
Mm-hmm.
Basically providing a lot of details and such about how he has been treated incredibly poorly throughout this whole dev process and his involvement in that. Because he's not an employee of id Software. He's a contractor.
Mm-hmm.
Claimed that, you know, there was a good 8-month period where he wasn't even paid for his work. Yeah, it wasn't paid until 8 months. He was 8 months through its production. Never approved of the soundtrack's release, you know, on a physical disc kind of thing. Wasn't informed that he'd be working on the soundtrack until Doom Eternal's Collector's Edition was advertised to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And that even Marty Stratton offered him a 6-figure sum to stay quiet about the matter. An NDA of sorts that is not a thing you do if you're not wanting to keep people from telling the truth about things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, said that, you know, when he found out that he had to work on this soundtrack OST for the Collector's Edition, that he had to crunch for 18 to 20 hour days to meet their deadline for it.
Yeah.
And then even then he didn't get to hear the final soundtrack and approve that work that was put into it until it released.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, so the result of the OST's careless editing and its obvious technical faults, mistakes, and errors left him stunned. Alongside my direct contributions were an additional 47 tracks made by poorly editing together bits and pieces taken from my in-game score, exhibited the same thoughtless disregard for basic music fundamentals that plagued the preliminary edits id Software showed me a week earlier. And yeah, has a lot of receipts to show, lots of screenshots of things. He literally has a bunch of links to the various parts of this, so it is, he put a lot of work even into just the formatting of this post here on Medium for that. So if you're looking for all that. Yeah, he said, I haven't been paid for over half of Doom Eternal's music.
Yeah.
The game includes more than double the music I was contracted to produce, rejects mock-ups, demos, many of which were never meant for public release.
Mm-hmm.
I created this music as part of the development process and shared it with id Software in good faith. But id Software used the music in the game, marketing, and soundtrack and still refuses to pay me for it. And he has said that, you know, the Doom Eternal OST was a mess. It was announced with my name attached and made available for pre-order before I was contracted to produce it. Despite my alarm and constant appeals, Marty refused to do anything about the situation, leading to a 9-month delay before I could start work. After 7 months of inaction, I reported my concerns to Bethesda. Bethesda and I negotiated the Doom Eternal OST directly without Marty's involvement. Yeah. I received the contract on March 18th, 2020, just 48 hours before Doom Eternal was released.
Mm-hmm.
The delay was announced a week earlier before I was under contract. The deadline was April 16th, 29 days later. The contract stipulated id Software had complete creative control, would acquire access to all my source material.
Mm-hmm.
You know that Marty withheld crucial details from him until 13 days before the deadline, such as potential legal trouble they faced for taking pre-orders before it was under contract, details about their internally produced OST, an alternative edited from my in-game score, which they'd worked on for at least 6 months without my knowledge or involvement. You know, he didn't approve the release, and the Reddit statements, that open letter that they put out, all the lies that were in it, the NDA he was offered to keep him from talking about this and all that. This is along the way, his reputation and all that took a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
Probably lost opportunities for other work in the wake of that release and the big statement it put out and all that. If you're interested in getting into all of that drama, that is all there and pretty well documented. Definitely worth checking out if you are interested in that. It seems like a very shitty situation. I don't know if he's looking at any sort of lawsuit or anything. Probably not. He probably just wants the truth to be out there.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing is sort of since that game's release, you know, Microsoft's acquisition was finalized. And so they are, you know, ultimately the top ones involved in all this.
Yeah.
Now. So that would be interesting to see if that is any part of this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, he did a very good job on those scores.
Yeah.
In a lot of games these days, you know, the in-game score is, you know, a lot of snippets of music because it's supposed to be, you know, weaved in and out as things happen. So concocting a OST out of that is a very tough thing to do.
Oh yeah.
And especially when you're just hiring people internally to just do it without the composer's input. Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something you hate to see, especially with modern Doom, because, you know, modern Doom is all the crazy rock soundtracks. They've been tremendous. I've never played a Doom game, but I've definitely heard their soundtracks. Yeah. You can totally rock on to, like, demon killing. You know, Brandon mentioned the example with the Bayonetta 3 voice actors. It's tough to see this happening with music, too, especially with how important this is. It sounds, it's just really rough. But I'm glad this guy is trying to get the truth out. And, you know, and unfortunately, id Software has been one of those companies that's sort of been like the rock stars of the industry. And I'm saying that in a negative tone. So, you know, I'm hoping that Microsoft's able to.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, unfortunate situation. Hopefully there's some rectification there. But let's get to some more positive news here at the end. The Indie World Showcase happened earlier this week.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was announced on Monday. Then they held it on Wednesday morning.
Oh.
As I was glad they did that because doing on Tuesday would have been kind of weird with all the election day stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
Extra chaos for no real reason, so they took the smart route of putting it on Wednesday. So
yeah,
work our way through this list, and there's a lot of interesting indie games here. They start off with Venba. This is a narrative cooking game set in the 1980s. With like South Indian family that recently immigrated to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're trying to reconnect with their heritage and trying to figure out a recipe they thought they had lost,
mm-hmm.
Or multiple recipes, and figure that out and sort of get in tune with their family history.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be out Switch and PC in spring 2023. It's nice to see some more of these like cooking games, especially ones around other cultures that you don't typically see too much of. So, yeah, that one looks pretty neat. Then there's Goodbye World. This is a, about two friends and indie game developers striving to find the perfect idea for the next game. You watch their story develop as you play through stages of a retro-inspired puzzle platformer while following their day-to-day struggles. So that's kind of a neat approach. That is Switch and PC. It'll be out sometime in November, later this month. Kind of weird not to have a date yet, but I'm sure they'll announce it whenever they're ready.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next one up here, Have a Nice Death. This is one we... Go ahead.
I think the main thing is just making sure that, you know, they're shown on the Direct. That way it has some sort of spotlight, especially when you go into the eShop and it says, oh, featured on Nintendo Direct, and then they have a list of games there. And then, like, just to quickly go back to the first game, like, it's pretty interesting seeing how they're going ahead and mixing the cooking with various historical and story aspects. Like, because otherwise, like, it would be tough to really care, right? Seeing that this is made from a diverse team, made with, like, cuisine that's really taken off, like, I want to say, in Europe and stuff, but not as big in, like, in the United States. Like, it would be pretty interesting there. So, looking forward to eventually trying that one out.
Yeah. Yeah. Next game here is Have a Nice Death. This is one that's been out in early access on PC for a little bit. But it's kind of a game about being the CEO of Death Incorporated, aka Death. And you have not heard from your various departments in a while.
Yeah.
So you have to go down and bust some heads and kill all of them. As you learn your new spells and curses and get new weapons and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that'll be out March 22nd, 2023, Switch and PC. So you can keep an eye on that. But if you want to play it sooner, PC has an early access version you can play as it gets finished up. Next game here, Eka, a.k.a. From... Yeah, Cosmo, Ghetto, and NeoWiz. Yeah, you're in this top-down, open-worldish kind of game, a smaller kind of game, as you're finding inner peace on an isolated island paradise. And handcrafted islands covered in majestic mountains, dense tropical forests, and inviting hot springs. Aka can nurture flora and fauna, build a shelter, craft items, or even feed baby dragons. So kind of a one of those kind of farming survival kind of games, but less about fighting enemies or anything like that. So that's kind of a neat approach there. That'll be out Switch and PC December 15th. Next up here, Pepper Grinder. This is published by Devolver Digital. This is a character named Pepper who has this drill that she uses to burrow through these levels, grabbing all the gold and treasure that's been stolen from her, somehow lost in the dirt and all that. But it's like an action-adventure game kind of thing. So you're kind of digging through the terrain and all that kind of stuff. Looks really neat from what it is, what they've shown so far.
Pepper Driller was by far my game of the show so far. And of course, it's a Devolver game. I don't know, there's normally bangers, and it's no different. It brings up a lot of, I don't know if you guys remember Drill Dozer. It was a game developed by Game Freak, I think for the Game Boy Advance, like, way back, and I had a lot of fun with that one. So this one looks a lot more fast-paced.
Yeah, so that'll be coming to Switch and PC next year at some point. Other game was 2023.
Yeah.
So you'll see that at some point. Next up here, Coffee Talk. Episode 2, Hibiscus and Butterfly. So the follow-up to the original game. Unfortunately, the lead dev on that died earlier this year at some point. But the rest of the team is carrying on with that. It's sort of a coffee brewing narrative adventure visual novel kind of thing. as you're a barista in your own late night coffee shop talking to a bunch of weird characters, and you get to some people that are of a more fantastical nature, you know, ogres and that kind of stuff. So you're kind of trying to find the right coffee for each person. You can even do latte art as well, and even find secret recipes. So it looks neat. That is out on everything: PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, PC, spring of next year. So you can check that one out. There's Oni, Road to the Mightiest Oni. This is one we've talked about before. But yeah, this is one where you're a demon warrior, Oni, who is in this like 3D action adventure game where you're fighting other demons as you're sort of dealing with a lot of like Japanese folktale kind of stuff in there. So looks really neat. You can also have a friend join you with you'll be able to control both characters with a single Joy-Con controller. Okay, that's just how you play it. But yeah, that's neat. It's going to be out on PlayStation, Switch, and PC March 9th, 2023. So get a potential good indie game there early next year. Next up here, Desta, The Memories Between, for Switch and PC. This is from the creators of Monument Valley. This is a roguelike. Strategic turn-based tactics as well as dodgeball action. It was like a very neat look to it, and kind of a strategy as you kind of run around in these areas to pick up these like dodgeball looking things that you can throw at enemies or, you know, bounce off of walls and such to get some good surprise hits on them as you're trying to do all stuff to defeat them or even like affect how they're talking to you. Conversation, all that kind of stuff. So that was pretty neat. And there's A Space for the Unbound. That one's been around a bit. Let's see, where's it at on here? There it is. It's a slice of life adventure game set in the late 90s, rural Indonesia. Tells a story about the relationship between a boy and a girl with supernatural powers. When mysterious power threatens their existence, they must explore their town to uncover hidden secrets, face the end of the world, and perhaps learn more about each other. That'll be out PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC January 19th of 2023. I think it's the week before the Dead Space remake, so.
Yeah.
Busy, busy time there.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see, next up was a game called Dordogne. This is from a French studio. As I say, in this immersive narrative experience, you'll play as Mimi, a girl who spent all her childhood summers in the Dordogne region of France. Now Mimi returns to the home of her late grandmother, who has left behind a series of letters and lost family secrets to be uncovered. And then you're kind of going back and forth between the past and the present as you're kind of discovering secrets that lets you know more about your grandmother and family history and secrets and all that kind of stuff. That looks really neat. That's going to be out on everything: PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC, spring 2023. And yeah, published by Focus Entertainment. So there's that. That looks pretty neat. And there's Botany Manor. This is an adventure game where you're, let's see, you take on the role of Arabella Green, a retired botanist who owns a historical manor in the 19th century. She takes care of the manor's magnificent gardens by solving plant-based puzzles and preserving a collection of forgotten flora. Expect the manor will show clues, newspaper clippings, letters, and more to help Arabella's gardening skills blossom while you're learning more about her. So, yeah, that'll be out Switch and PC sometime next year. And, yeah, Once Upon a Jester, I talked about that earlier. It's out now, Switch and PC. Very fun game. Definitely worth checking out. They also had Rogue Legacy 2. That is now out on the Switch. So you can check that out. It's more Rogue Legacy.
Yeah.
So there you go. Then they showed off Blanc. This is the game featuring a fawn and a wolf cub that work together to survive in this snowy area where neither one is able to survive alone as they try to find their way home. So it's kind of a co-op adventure game of sorts. But yeah, that's it's completely text free. You have local and online multiplayer or co-op play, as you can play with friends or maybe strangers. I don't know if they would have any sort of matchmaking or sorts with that. That'll be a console exclusive on Nintendo Switch. It'll be out February 14th. It'll also be out on PC at some point as well, or probably PC that same day. We had another game that's coming out in the middle of all that chaos.
Yep.
So there you go. Let's see, WrestleQuest. That is the sort of wrestling RPG kind of game. They showed off a bit more of that, and that'll be out May 2023. That is on everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC. So that'll be neat to see. There's Wobble Dogs Console Edition. That's on Switch. That's a Switch version of a PC, as they call it here, a casual 3D pet simulation sandbox.
Yep.
Which pet players care for their own personal collection of wobbly, mutating dogs. And that'll be out November 17th, so later this week, coming up. So you can check that out. Then there's Storyteller, and an award-winning reactive puzzler in which players must use their own wits to retell iconic tales. That'll be out March 23rd, 2023, is a console launch exclusive.
Yeah.
So there you go for that. And, oh yeah, that's this game. It's very kind of storybook style where you have these frames to move characters around to tell the story that you get from the title kind of thing. But it's also one where you can find alternate story ideas to play around with, maybe get alternate solutions for things. So that's a very neat. Let's see, World of Horror. This is a game that's been on Game Pass for a while. I don't think it is anymore, but it's a, they call it a 1-bit roguelite horror RPG that is very much based on Junji Ito style of horror. Pits players against the eldritch mysteries and malevolent legends of Japanese folklore. That is, I think, already out on Xbox at this point, but it'll be coming to PS4, Switch, and PC next summer, 2023. That might be when it's hitting 1.0. I'm not 100% sure on that. They showed off Curse of the Sea Rats, which is like a hand-animated Metroid-like featuring pirate rats. So you can check that out. That's Switch and PC early 2023. Inscription, that is a deck-building roguelike with escape room style like puzzles and some little bit of scary, spooky stuff in it. As well as some game fourth wall breaking stuff. That'll be out on Switch December 1st to check out. And yeah, a little to the left, I mentioned playing that earlier. That's a very good little puzzle game. Out now, Switch and PC. And the last one, they ended with a game that people have been excited to get an update on for a while. No, it's not. I forget the game I was going to reference, but it's a Sports Story. The follow-up to Golf Story. I believe this is also a complete Switch exclusive. Where it's a sport RPG where you sort of rise through the ranks of the sports world and you learn to take on just all sorts of different disciplines. You have golf and tennis and football or soccer in that sense, but then also be able to try out BMX and volleyball and cricket and a bunch of other stuff in there. But yeah, it's not always just about sports. You'll be able to explore the world and go into, I guess, dungeons and all this kind of weird stuff, which Golf Story kind of had some of that weird stuff where you kind of went and did other things beyond just golf, though it was all in the context of how you controlled golf games. So I'm curious to see how they expand that stuff, but that's out in December, almost here. So we'll probably have a date for that pretty soon. So yeah, that was the Indie World Showcase. Some good stuff there. Definitely a lot of stuff for people to check out.
This one was quite the banger for me. Like, I want to play on more. And the coolest thing about this particular presentation, it showed that even though the almost there is still a whole, you know, not even stuff that was shown on the mission, things like call that one game from the Rick and Morty creator, and then you go ahead and throw these on top. Like once December hits, like there is no lull. It just continues. So you know whether or not you're playing the games that you got on Thanksgiving, there's still a whole lot to look forward to under the Christmas tree. Once so pretty cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely a lot of stuff to look forward to. But yeah, that's gonna do it for the show this week.
Hey.
Thank you to Brandon Danner for joining this week.
Always.
We'll be back next week with more game talk as we head into more of the holiday season, though I don't know that there's a ton coming out this week. Let me see here. Gaming. Yeah, that's the thing I look at. It's the Wikipedia page, people updates, with at least the more notable stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. Okay, yeah, there's a... Yeah, Pentiment is this week for Xbox and PC. Somerville is also Xbox and PC. There's that PS5 port of Ease 8 that I'm pretty sure is not going to be free for people that already own it on PS4. Because why would they do that?
Yeah.
Goat Simulator 3 is out this week, so that's cool. Yeah, Goodbye World is out this week, as we talked about. The Wobble Dogs game.
Mm-hmm.
Is also out this week. The Dark Picture Anthology, Dark Pictures Anthology, The Devil and Me is out as well.
Mm-hmm.
Spider-Man Miles Morales is out on PC. Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. So a lot of stuff this week. And Evil West is also out.
Yeah.
So there's that. And that's a lot. Next week we got, that's the week after that, Gundam Evolution hits the PlayStation, Xbox consoles. It's the if you don't want to play Overwatch because of Blizzard and all the icky stuff around there, this game is what if Overwatch had Gundams in it?
Yeah,
and that's been a thing that people have been drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
People like Gundam games, and not many of them are great.
Mm-hmm.
This one seems to have gotten people's attention.
Yep.
The Front Mission First remake is there on the 30th.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, some good stuff coming out here over the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
That's gonna do it for us. So thank you everybody for listening. If you enjoy the show, feel free to let friends and family know they should check it out and select strangers that will hopefully voted Democrats in the recent election.
Yeah.
Thank you all for tuning in. We'll see you all next time. Have a good one.